This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined again for 2017 by Bradley Chambers. Bradley, how you doing?
Happy New Year to you. We're back here with our first episode of the new year. I am coming off my second full day back at work, first day with kids. We had a really interesting in-service. We had a four-hour-long training session with our local police department on like stranger in the building kind of stuff, active shooter situations. And you know, obviously those are quite, I wouldn't even say scary, but they're just kind of tough meetings to sit through because you're talking about a lot of things that you hope never, ever happen. But it is good to be prepared. And I mean, one of the things I came away from realizing is if we follow the plans we have in place in terms of, you know, the doors we can enter in and exit out of and things like that, we've got a really good plan, I think. But and it's also helpful just that everybody has this top of mind, like just being secure by default.
Yeah, that's something that is on my desk to have a look at as well. I mean, it's more terrorism related in the UK, I think, rather than handgun violence. But there's certainly advice going about that as well. So it's something that's not going away, I suppose, isn't it?
No, don't think so. A couple things before we get started into our main topic, which is a mid-year deployment health check. You and I both have received our AirPods, and both received them a couple of days early. Mine shipped out, I think both of ours shipped Saturday, and we picked them up Monday, even though they're scheduled for delivery on Wednesday. And to me, I had a review up on ChambersDaily.com. It was like a super simple review. And it's like, look, if AirPods fit well in your ears, you'll really love them. To me, it's one of the best purchases I've made in years, and really a great value at the $159 price point. I mean, again, these are not going to replace your noise-canceling Bose headphones for the airplane. It's a different product category. That would be like comparing Sonos to a Bluetooth speaker. You buy them for different things, and you may own both. I don't love the double tap to Siri. I find that to be a little bit unreliable.
I found with that if you can get the force required correct, it's usually quite reliable after that. But for the first few weeks, I found it really hard to kind of make it happen, and actually doubly hard to sort of make it happen while you're walking around, because you often miss with the first hit or you don't get it quite correct. So I found it more reliable with practice, but I know what you're talking about.
I would just assume, say, hey, Siri, crap, I should not have said that on, sorry to everybody.
We'll beep that.
Yeah. Hey, you know who, to initiate Siri rather than actually, you have to double tap. But
I'm guessing they couldn't afford the battery life that would be required for them to be constantly listening.
That's probably a good point. And so that's something that you could, you know, conceivably think about, like a Series 2 of the AirPods. I've used them tons of, I probably have ran 30, 40 miles with them at this point. Used them in the rain. Sounds fantastic. The charging case is something sort of magical. I mean, obviously the technology behind it's neat, but just the way it changes the way you feel about the product, it's always charged. So, you know, you can imagine something like that for your like iPhone, or you know, and I think that's where you could be going, like with this wireless charging, where imagine you just, you know, set it on your nightstand and it's charging. You don't even think about it's charging. And or maybe you can imagine like an Apple iPhone case that has a small battery built into it somehow. I mean, just a really thin battery. I don't know. I'm just brainstorming. But the fact that it's always charged is really, really great. I've used them at, you know, working out, around the house, all kinds of activities, and I really don't have any complaints about them whatsoever.
No, I have to just completely agree with you. I think it's been they're the best Bluetooth headphones I've ever used. And I've not had a lot of pairs, but I've had some. And the difference between the AirPods, which are two independent devices, versus like I used to have a pair, as many of them used to be, where you had a wire going around the back of your neck. And that was just never quite the right thing, and it was never comfortable. They weren't a very good pair, to be honest with you, but the AirPods are a completely different thing. And what I've been really surprised by, kind of blown away by actually, is the range and power of the signal to the headphones. So, for example, I'll like leave the phone on the desk, and quite often I'll walk away from the phone, go upstairs, go to the other side of the house, and I'm still getting a perfect signal from the phone. which is far, far more than I've had with any other Bluetooth device. So really, really impressive.
Yeah, the W1 chip is really magical there. And I only wish it extended to the Apple TV, because like the whole have, you have to pair it to your Apple TV, like the old school Bluetooth. And then it's like you kind of really, you kind of need to disconnect it when you want it to go back to your phone. It's nice that you can go on your Mac and just say, hey, output the sound from Bradley's AirPods, and it'll just take over the audio. To me, there's some opportunity for the future with a little bit more handoff stuff, where let's say, for example, I'm listening to music on my iPad or my Mac at my desk, and you have your AirPods in. Well, then you walk away. Couldn't it some way just take over the signal on, it's probably the exact same thing on your phone that's in your pocket on your AirPods? Like almost like a handoff.
If you're in an Apple Music situation, yeah.
So
interesting.
Yeah, something to think about. But I could even see a future, possibly, maybe not, where could you have like onboard storage to the AirPods that you could sync music to it? And it probably won't ever happen. I imagine Apple's strategy there would be to sync music to your watch instead.
Yeah.
Just something to think about when you start thinking like, what is this future, product? What does this product look like in the future? So far, mm-hmm. one of my favorite purchases in years, though.
Yeah, I know. I'm super pleased with mine as well. They haven't left my pocket since I got them.
No, absolutely not. And I did find an app today. I'll have a link in the show notes. It's called, I fell asleep last night with my AirPods in, and they were, couldn't find them when I woke up. And they're like, in the covers or whatever. There's an app called Find AirPods that helps you, it looks for the signal that the AirPods put off. I guess whatever W1 signal that's putting off, and helps you locate them. Now, obviously, it's not getting you, down to the big, right down to it, but it can tell you if you're getting close. It's like a $4 app on the App Store, and it seems to work pretty well. I used it today. It's called Find AirPods.
Yeah, I haven't been too concerned about losing the whole outfit, but there is always a possibility of dropping or knocking one of them out of your ear. I'm always concerned, if I'm in the bathroom, leaning over the toilet or something, one's going to drop out, but it never has. But I think actually having one fall out and then probably be stood on or something is actually my greater concern than I've just misplaced them because I'm careless.
Oh, yeah. And, Chris, again, if you always put them back in the case, you won't, it'll be no problem. Yeah. Another thing I got over the break was I got my new Wi-Fi set up at home. I did invest in Google's Wi-Fi platform. So this is a product category that's really come on the market in the past few years, or past year. Eero, Amplify HD, Lumia, and then Google's a new one. It's these mesh networks. So it's where you can have your main router, and then you plug in these other products, kind of satellite receivers, and they rebroadcast the signal in a better technology. It's a mesh technology versus just a repeater technology. Google's is pretty attractive because you can get a 3-pack for $299, where Eero is $499 retail for a 3-pack. And they ran deals over Christmas for $100 off. Then Amazon was a little cheaper. But nevertheless, I did invest in Google's and really, really big fan so far. Got a review going up on Tools and Toys in a month or so of it. But set it up in about 20, 30 minutes. Rock solid connections, fantastic. Now, my house is a little unique in that we have Cat 6 everywhere. So these things are hardwired in for the backhaul connection. But I did test the mesh, and it works great. Literally overhauled my house's Wi-Fi in 20, 25 minutes. You manage it via an app. It's actually the only way to manage it, via their iOS or Android app. But great value for the money. The biggest downside so far is you can't find them anywhere. It's very hard to get. Amazon's been sold out from day one. I just happened to look up to find it on BestBuy.com and bought it and got it quickly.
Well, that sounds pretty cool. Yep, that's one of my 2017 projects, is to rethink home Wi-Fi. So I'm just waiting for those things to roll out in the UK. I'm pretty sure you can't get the Google one here, but I think maybe Eero is either here or on the way. So I'll keep my eye on that.
Yeah, and most of that technology, how fast these things are is most of the time will depend on your home. It's hard to say one's the fastest, unless you're testing them all in the exact same home. But even that might not be the same experience in your home. Wi-Fi is a standards-based technology, and so much is in with the management and the environment. So Eero is a great platform. I heard great reviews of it, and I'd love to test it out one day just to see how it compares. It's the most exciting thing is that people are willing to spend a little bit of money on Wi-Fi at home, because the $30 router from from Walgreens or CVS Pharmacy is not going to cut it, with 15 devices on the network. I checked, and we have if everybody's at home, we have 18 devices on the network.
Yeah, we're about 15 at the moment. And the thing as well with that is that they are all just gobbling data down as well. You know, it's like, you know, Apple TV, which is streaming Netflix, and then the kids are on YouTube, and, you know, I'm downloading podcasts and my wife is doing something else. She's on, you know, the web or something. But so many video streams going at the same time is, and it's remarkable to me that my existing infrastructure kind of kept up with the increase. But I think it's time to move up to something a little better.
So you got another new purchase over the holidays as well, right?
Yeah, I went crazy and I upgraded from an Apple Watch Series 0, the original Apple Watch, to a Series 1 Apple Watch, which a few people were kind of like, well, why would you do that? Because it's basically the same thing. And the way I kind of described it to people was it's kind of everything you liked or hated about the Apple Watch, but just faster. And I have been a big fan of the Apple Watch since the first day. And I had some Christmas money, I was giving some gifts, and I didn't really want to buy another thing. Like, I was thinking, well, do I buy a drone or something like that or whatever? I didn't want another thing in my life, but I wanted a better version of what I had and what I really liked. And what I, you know, during a school day, I must touch my Apple Watch, you know, 50, 60, 70 times. So I reckon that a speed boost and all of that would have been a good investment. So I was already a fan of the Apple Watch, so I'm a fan of this new one because it's everything I liked but better. But I think if you didn't like the Apple Watch, yeah, the Series 1 is not going to do anything for you. And if you're not really, really, really into fitness, I don't think the Series 2 is going to change your mind about it either. But if you liked it, it's a nice upgrade. And I think it's far more kind of fluid and responsive than the original watch. And what it leaves me doing is wishing for more native apps, you know. So, for example, the Overcast Apple Watch app does exist, but it's really like a first-generation Apple Watch app. And I think if you were to use a Series 1 watch, it would really feel like, yeah, I want these native apps, you know. So the ones that are native, like pCalc and 1Password, are really, really slick now. And they're genuinely kind of keeping up with the sort of response times that you really need to have when you're working with a watch. So, yeah, it's a kind of, I'm hoping that developers will come back and have another look at their Apple Watch apps and maybe crank them up a little bit more for the next generation.
Like, watch apps are like voice input methods. They have to be nearly flawless every time. Otherwise, like, mm-hmm. It's just still faster to pull out another device to do things. I think you kind of had that same experience with your, like, with Alexa and the Amazon Echo, correct?
Yeah, the Echo was a funny one because I suppose I'd been kind of used to Siri, and I just felt that the Echo didn't really do very much. You know, a lot of people are kind of like, well, it's great for timers. And I'm like, well, I've got timers, don't care, you know. But it's a different thing.
Yeah, it's you know, these new simplified input methods, voice, wearables, they've got to be nearly flawless. And like you said, if a watch app is slow, it's like, might as well grab my, you know, if the Overcast app is slow and it takes like 5 seconds to launch, you might as well just dig for your phone.
Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of apps that are pretty slick. You know, OmniFocus is great, pCalc is great, and I'm finding myself using them, you know, really quite a lot now. Even more so. It's the same software as on the Series 0 watch, but just everything's faster, and your arm doesn't get tired while you're interacting with an app the way it used to.
How has battery life on the Series 1 been versus the Series 0?
Well, it's hard to say. I feel it's just about the same, really. It's not much of a bigger battery, I don't think, in the Series 1. The Series 2 is the one that's got the bigger battery, but also has got the higher drain with things like GPS. But I never had a problem with the Apple Watch before. I was always putting it on the stand with between 30 and 50% battery life at the end of the day. So it's not worse, but it's not noticeably better either.
Yeah, I don't think I even mentioned on the show. I actually returned my Series 2 that I purchased. No reason. I returned it. It was just me being fickle. I'm fickle that way. So I returned it. I got a TomTom GPS watch for Christmas. I don't wear it day to day. It's really just for running. And then it syncs with over to their app, which then goes over to RunKeeper, which is where I keep kind of track of my activities. But that's just me being fickle. Nevertheless, so our main topic for today is kind of a mid-year deployment health check. So, even if you didn't have a new deployment this year, in my mind, all deployments are new every year. You don't necessarily have new gear every year, but your setup is new every year. You know, you're deploying devices every year because you've got new students. You've got students graduating. You've got new students coming in. You may have to replace old devices or broken devices. And so we are kind of at, obviously, the halfway point of the year. So, you know, what can you do to, you know, see how you're doing? It's a good time to take stock of what's working, what's not working, and really what changes can you make to make the rest of the year go smoother. Because, May will be here soon, but it is still January, and so we do have a long way to go. So for me, the first thing that you ought to think about is, like, where are you at on your iOS updates? Like, obviously, at this point, I would say iOS 10 is stable enough, and most of your apps have had enough time to get out updates that you should be running iOS 10 on all your devices at this point. So, like, usually, I know in the Jamf interface, you can run a report that shows you, like, hey, show me what devices are not on this iOS version. So you can say iOS, I don't even know what the 10.2.1 or whatever the most recent one is. And then it'll show you what devices are not on that. And so you can either, force an update, or if it's, go talk to those students, say, hey guys, why haven't you updated iOS 10 yet? We want to get you on that. And just kind of work through those to make sure all those devices are fully up to date.
Yeah, I've been pushing pretty hard on this, and I think 10.2 was a big help because there were new emojis, and that's always something that gets people pressing that button. But I always run a series of smart groups, basically, which I have one whenever there's a new major version, which is usually just after the start of the school year for us. I'll have devices on iOS 10 and devices on iOS 9 or whatever the current version is, and the version minus one. But then I also have another smart group called devices not on the latest iOS. And the criteria there is where the version is not whatever the absolute latest version is. And whenever a new version comes out, I just update the criteria for that group, and the membership obviously changes. But then that's a very helpful one to see, well, who's not on the major version and then who's not on the absolute latest patch version. And I'm a lot more relaxed about people not being in the latest patch version, but sometimes when you go across a major version, like we had this time with iWork 3.0, there was a new version of iWork that could do certain things only if you were on iOS 10. So we had a situation for a while where some people had not updated iOS 10. They were working on the older version of Pages and Keynote and so on. And I mean, it wasn't a major problem, but just occasional, incompatibilities between people. But we're all now on iOS 10, at least. I'm pretty sure I got the last person who was a teacher who was a bit of a holdout on me, but she finally updated her iPad. One of the things I've been doing with that, actually, Bradley, which is quite interesting, is using that smart group, people not in the latest version, and using the remote command, which sets the wallpaper, or you can set the lock screen or the home screen wallpaper. And I made this kind of really ugly, unmissable wallpaper that says, please update to the latest iOS version or your iPad will be locked quite soon, which gives people the prompt that they need. What a lot of people found confusing about that, though, was they thought that as soon as they updated iOS, their wallpaper would go back to normal. And it doesn't, because it's just a set and forget setting. It's not a, if the version is this, then set the wallpaper to this, otherwise set it to whatever the user wants. It just forces a change of wallpaper. And that's fine to kind of get a message out to people that they cannot ignore. But a lot of people were confused because they were expecting the wallpaper to change back, and it never did. So that message kept saying it, even though it's not a live message, it's just a static wallpaper. But it certainly can't be ignored, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's a good way to get people's attention, for sure.
We haven't had many problems with iOS 10 at all this year, actually. I think it's been really, really steady. And I'm trying to think, even some of our older apps, we've got some apps that haven't been touched in quite a while. They seem to be working okay with 10 as well.
The only issue we've had, and it's not even an iOS issue, one of our vendors, Renaissance Learning, we have a product called Star Reader, and it's a reading comprehension program, and we are big fans of it in a sense. But they decided this year to discontinue their native app and go like web app everywhere, which, I mean, we've been through Java. We know how that works. The write it once and run everywhere. That's to me, and I told them, I said, that is a benefit to developers, not to users. No one has used a non-native app and prefers it. Native apps are certainly on mobile devices. It just worked better. And of course, I was on the phone with their support saying, look at your phone. Like, how many of those are native apps? Like, versus, like, how many of them are you running through Safari? And the guy, I basically got them to admit it was, they were trying to be simple. And the only reason they ever went with the app years ago is because their platform used to be Flash-based, and they wanted to be able to run on iOS, so they made a native app. Well, now they've rewritten all their products in HTML5, so they just figure, well, we'll go HTML5 everywhere. It's Okay, we can get past that. I mean, it's not ideal, but I don't like it. But here's a good example. I was administering a STAR exam to one of my classes, and basically the keyboard would overlay. Every time a new question would come up, the keyboard would pop up over it. You'd have to minimize it and hide it. And then you tap on it, hit next, keyboard pop up. And they, you know, it really was frustrating to students. And certainly if you had, like, you know, first and second grade students, very frustrating. They it's throwing them off their game in reality. Like, you almost can't trust those test results because it's messed them up. Well, so we, you know, they basically claimed it was something the iOS 10 caused and they were going to fix it on their end. What's been happening since November, and we literally supposedly got the fix yesterday. And I haven't, you know, I haven't actually tested the fix, but to me that was like a pretty frustrating thing. It's like you go away from your native app. And move into a web app. It was, you know, and again, what product on mobile devices is better on the web? None of them. Like, they're all, you know, you prefer a native app whenever you can.
Absolutely. And the only thing I like better on the web is Wikipedia. I've never really been a Wikipedia app that I love, but completely agree. Yep.
Another thing to consider is, like, look at your app lineup. Do you have any glaring weaknesses in it? And then that's where you want to come and talk to your teachers and say, are there areas where the iPad or whatever device you're using isn't just meeting your needs? Is there a part of your curriculum? Is there an app category that we're missing? Something that would help the students with the retention? And that's an honest question. Like, are there weaknesses? And there may be even, like, good apps. I'm actually starting a unit on digital citizenship with our fourth and fifth graders, and I found out that Common Sense Media has a really, really good app for digital citizenship. So, like, after we did kind of some talking today, talking through stuff, and they're all kind of working on presentations about it, then they're going to move into that app. And it's like, just from finding it, it's like, I didn't know I needed it, but then I needed it, and it was there. So, it's pretty good. It's Common Sense Media. It's called Digital Compass. But just, you know, what weaknesses are in your app lineup?
Yeah, and are there any apps that are, do you know of any that are planning for new upgrades? That's something to be aware of as well. You know, as work kind of restarts after Christmas, it's always something I find is every so often, sort of January, February, it's like, here's what we've been working on all the second half of last year. Here's a new version, particularly for developers who may be kind of slow to support a new iOS version. Now is the time that you tend to see some people shipping stuff out. So it's worth just keeping an eye on that as well and being alert to that. As the App Store kind of opens for business again, because you know how they have that kind of shutdown over Christmas. Mm-hmm. I started to see updates coming back through in the last couple of days for stuff that I was using. And it's just something to keep an eye on as well.
So next thing is kind of examining, how's your network holding up? I mean, did you have certain parts of your building that consistently reported issues over the first semester? It's like, if so, maybe, you know, you got to address those. Maybe you don't have enough wireless capacity. Maybe you've got like a flaky switch port on that side of the building, or maybe you've got some wireless interference. I mean, you know, it could be countless things, but just you're trying to take stock of how your network is holding up and any changes you need to make now. To kind of get you through the rest of the year. And one of the things, too, is don't forget about applying firmware updates to all your gear. So your firewall, your switches, your wireless. I'm not a big fan of doing this over Christmas, because then that means I have to work over Christmas. And if something goes wrong, then I really have to work over Christmas. And so what I do a lot of times is, like, we're off for Martin Luther King Day here in January. So I will usually, like, schedule some of that stuff to go out, like, you know, apply firmware updates on, like, that Sunday night, and then come in, check everything Monday, see how it's working. You know, that way, if something went wrong, I've got time to revert back. So I'm not having to work over Christmas, but yet I don't have to do it, like, on a Saturday.
Yeah, that's a good one to think about. And the other one that I would kind of throw in just sort of alongside that, Bradley, is now is the time to start thinking about infrastructure for next school year as well. Particularly for something, it just came to mind as you were talking about switches and things. I was thinking, yeah, we're going to have a look at our switch, and now's the time to probably start researching and start, you know, talking to people. And things that have a long kind of lead time, or if you have to do any kind of building work, if you're thinking about cabling or extensions or anything for next year. I mean, one of the conversations we're having is what classes are going into what rooms for next year. And that's something that I have to think about, both from a teaching point of view, but also from a network point of view as well. So it's never too early to start thinking about some of that stuff.
That's a great point. I mean, this is getting into education buy-in season. And I know my phone started heating up today, actually. So I'm getting a lot of calls and setting up some meetings. And another thing to think about, too, is cleaning your gear. I mean, as weird as that sounds, we're getting into, like, you know, the cold season, flu season. Clorox wipes go a long way.
Yeah, we have them in a number of classes, particularly primary school classes, because they're not always the most disciplined at hygiene. Teenagers tend to be a little bit better. But we also put them in some of the classrooms where every pupil goes to, you know, not every pupil goes to every classroom, but there's one or two where they do. And just getting the teachers in those rooms to say, look, start of every other lesson, let's just clean our iPads and just make sure. That goes a long way, and of course the other thing, you know, what helps us a lot this Christmas was the health department sent us a poster which says, if you have sickness or diarrhea, stay off school for 48 hours after the symptoms stop. And we put that right on the front door of the school, and that has actually improved our absence rate more than anything, because I think parents often feel bad for keeping their kids off for 2 days, and we're like, no, please, 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 you know, just do not come to the building until you're better. But a wee bit of education went a long way there. But we also do clean up our iPads as we go as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, stay at home. We always tell people that. It's like, if you're sick, stay at home. We don't want you here. Another thing, and you had an Instagram over Christmas that brought this to my mind. If you had students that got pencils for Christmas, you definitely want to take note to get those labeled. I think one of your daughters had like a label around the lid, right?
Yeah, April got one for Christmas, and I applied. I have these. It's a Brother label printer, which I use for everything. But the label height was short enough that you could actually wrap it around the flat part of the cap as well. So the shaft of the pencil and the cap, both labeled, is a very good idea.
And last thing, and I mentioned this too, is like, you know, ask how your teachers are feeling. Like, you know, stop by, say, hey, how are your devices working? Any problems we have? I did that to a teacher up for Christmas. She said, yeah, I've been meaning to come talk to you. I have this one that can't do anything. Well, it was in airplane mode. It's just, you know, something simple like that. It's like, you know, when she, you know, triggered that she needed to come talk to me, but just hadn't made it down that way and kept forgetting. So just walk by and say, hey, is there anything I can do for you? And one thing, I think now is a good time to start thinking about apps that no longer meet your needs. Like, you know, how long has it gone through with updates? You know, do you have alternatives? Just start thinking about that stuff because, you know, you can go years without apps being updated. And, you know, that's just kind of a problem. I don't know if you've noticed the Clear app for iPhone, like the little to-do app.
Yeah.
Had not been updated in like a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And the website doesn't even load anymore.
We've got an app like that. Yeah. We've got an app like that called Moodboard, which is still for sale for quite a lot of money in the App Store. And teachers keep asking me every year, like, can we get Moodboard again and can we get more licenses for it? And I'm like, we are not spending another penny on that app until we see an update, because it's like iOS 6 era design. And I keep saying to people, one day that's going to break and lose all your work, you know, and you better be ready for that. So I'm trying to wean people off that, but my goodness, it's taken me a while to persuade them to use Keynote instead.
One of the things I did this week is I sent out just like a general email reminding people about phishing, email phishing, and just best practices there, like how to check to see if it's like actually from the sender. And even if it is, don't assume if it seems fishy, like there's like it's just a link or if it's a random attachment asking you to log into your Google account, and just a simple, you know, two paragraph, just be aware, be vigilant, and that kind of stuff. Showed them how to check it on iOS and on the web as well, just to see, because the name can be spoofed to be whatever you want it to be. It's just, you know, most of the time it'll say, you know, Bradley Chambers, but then it's from like not my actual email address. They're just skimming it from our website, or somebody else has gotten hacked and they're, you know, going through address books and things like that.
It's a good opportunity always just to kind of refresh people on all kinds of security. I mean, the one that keeps me awake at night constantly is people phoning up and sort of doing a social engineering attack for information. Not that I think we have specific targets that are likely to receive that kind of attack, but it's such a commonplace thing in education for people just to phone up a school, claim to be somebody, and get given information over the phone. And I've been, well, for years now, trying to kind of close that up. But there's a lot of kind of really pushy organizations out there who just, they phone up every school they deal with, and they just expect to be told things over the phone, like people's home phone numbers and home addresses and things. And I'm like, I'm not telling you this over the phone. And people are yelling at me down the phone about this, because I don't know who you are, right? And that's something that I think, it's easier in a bigger school for us. Like, we have a lot of people answer the phone. Like, teachers will just pick up the phone if they're off and free. In a bigger school, of course, you've got professional secretaries who are doing that. But for smaller schools, it's worth just sort of reiterating those rules of giving information out over the phone as well.
And one of the sad things we don't have an answer for is there is still no word on the iCloud storage issue. for student accounts.
Yeah, I can't believe this is still a thing. But yeah, I got linked on Daring Fireball over this. I did a kind of tweet storm about this. And, you know, I mean, when you think back to like the summer, you know, we were all talking to people at Apple and they were like, yeah, we know. And then my deployment started and I forgot about it because it wasn't a problem because everybody was on a brand new fresh Apple ID. And everybody was back, you know, had zero data on their device and zero data in their Apple ID. So it was happy times for a while. But I recently dealt with my first running out of iCloud storage space situation. And I clocked that about 18 weeks into the deployment. It took somebody. Now, it was somebody who had taken a lot of slow motion video of nothing in particular, and it was easy to resolve. But the fact that that's now a thing that I'm dealing with again is kind of depressing. And hopefully in 17, we'll see something move on that one.
Well, and the thing is, you don't have an answer for it. Like, it's like not like it's a complicated answer. There just is no answer.
Yeah, it's like delete your files. That's your solution. Or just keep pressing OK on the alert.
So, yeah, those are kind of some tips on just some things to think about mid-year. Of course, we do iOS 10.3 is probably on the horizon as well, which will probably be a big upgrade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to put a big marker on this that I'm purely speculating here. But if you remember back to last year, we were given information about iOS 9.3, which turned out to be really quite a huge release for education and enterprise. Not so much for consumers, although you did get the night shift feature in 9.3, but in 9.3 we also got, we got the promise of Apple School Manager, managed Apple IDs, the Apple Classroom app, shared iPad. Many of those features and all of them are built into iOS 9.3. So I was looking back. I had an article on Mac Stories about that, and it was January the 11th, 2016, was when the first beta of iOS 9.3 was CD'd to developers. So I'm kind of feeling, well, if history is going to repeat itself, and there have been rumors, I've not been told anything in particular, but there have been rumors that there is going to be a 10.3 that focuses more on iPad features again. It would be a good idea right now to get yourself a test device ready and start to think about how that's going to work for your devices and your infrastructure and your MDM server and Apple Classroom and your Wi-Fi and all those things that you would normally test. 10.3 may or may not be a big deal, but if history repeats itself, it's going to be something you're going to want to test quite carefully before it comes out.
Yeah, it'll be fun. And it looks like the iPad release market is getting back in line with where we need it to be in terms of being released in the spring and not in the fall, so we can start the year with new devices. So that's definitely good. So anything else for this week?
I guess that's it. I mean, there is also, like you said, the possibility of there being new iPad hardware at some point. What was it? Where did we get the 9.7 iPad Pro came out? Springtime last year, didn't it?
Yes.
So there might be new hardware. So if you are planning a deployment, you know, holding on till March time is probably a good idea before you actually sign off on anything in particular. But again, that's pure speculation. There's nothing I know about. I don't get told in advance about new hardware or new software, really, for that matter. But certainly not new hardware. So don't sign anything just yet. But get ready to think about that.
Well, it looks like I'm sure that the 12.9 inch iPad Pro is certainly due for an upgrade because it'll be what, a year and a half old at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it needs to get that same chip that's in the iPhone 7, doesn't it?
So maybe 3D Touch, but that's a far out one.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, what are you going to see in a 12.9 inch iPad Pro version 2? You're probably going to see the True Tone display from the 9.7 inch iPad. What else? Better camera. I mean, you're still a generation behind on the camera compared to... I think the camera on the 9.7 is actually better than the one in the 12.9 as well. So you're looking at an iPhone 6 era camera and a 6S era camera in the iPad Pro 9.7 as well. So definitely work to be done there. I strongly doubt you're going to get a double lens camera in the iPad, but stranger things have happened.
Yeah, we shall see. We shall see. Maybe like a new Apple Pencil 2.0.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Pencil with a razor on the end or something.
Ah, that'd be fantastic. Simple little things in life. Pencils with erasers. All right, well, we'll wrap it up there this week. I am Chambers Daily on the web and .com on the web and Bradley Chambers on Twitter.
Okay, I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter and Spears.org on the web.
Have a good week, everybody.